Hallelujah, he's risen. Hallelujah, he's alive. Hallelujah, sing for joy now. CrossFit, Jesus is alive. Open up your hearts. See the empty hospital bed. Though he got injured in Survivor Series, CrossFit, Jesus is alive. Hallelujah, he is risen. Hallelujah, he's alive. Hallelujah, sing for joy now. CrossFit, Jesus is alive. Woo! Everyone, it is Monday, so it is time for another episode of Inside the Ropes. And what a holy, holy day it is, because our Lord and Saviour, CrossFit Jesus, has returned to the WWE to save us from a life of sin, misery, and hopefully Roman Reigns' title reign. My name is Robert Duffin. I'm here with Kenny McIntosh. And
sadly, I could not be saved from that karaoke version that you just played.
Well, I actually, spoilers, guys, I heard on the interwebs, straight from Dave Meltzer himself, that that's actually going to be Seth Rollins' new theme tune.
To be fair, it's not that much worse than his current theme tune.
Well, we'll see what happens, because he didn't use that last night, but we'll get into that. Today's episode, let's have a quick rundown of what we're going to be doing today, folks. We're going to be talking some news, obviously, since we last spoke to you. The big thing is the Cody Rhodes' full statement regarding his WWE departure. Obviously, we're going to touch on that and a few other things as well. We're also going to be giving our gut reactions, our knee-jerk reactions to the WWE pay-per-view. The hot take, I guess, is what the kids are calling it on the Twitter. It's only been 12 hours or so since me, Kenny, and Kev of Square Circle Tees watched Extreme Rules and Walkabout, had many, many good beers, and then ran away from a tramp at the end of the night. It was pretty terrifying. So we're just going to give you our sort of knee-jerk hot takes. We'll be obviously returning later this week, though, with our third WWE pay-per-view roundtable, where we'll be I can't even speak, I'm so excited. We'll be inviting, we'll be joined by fellow ITR contributors, Sondra and David McCutcheon, to have a four-way. Well, okay, that sounded weird. We're going to talk about the pay-per-view the context of Raw having happened, and I'm probably also going to watch it again especially the main event, because I'm going to give you my gut reaction, folks, but I don't really know if I'll feel the same if I rewatch it. It's going to have to, I guess we'll see, right? I guess we'll see how we feel. But Kenny, shall we talk about the news? Oh no, wait, before we go, there's one other thing I forgot about. We have two things.
So we've got
one of the things is our guest.
Well, we've got Sondra on the show today to give us her weekly NXT rundown. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things. And then what's the other one, Robert?
Well, the other one is we're going to be joined by recently released NXT personality, Rich Brennan. Kenny had a chance to speak to Rich earlier this week, or the end of last week, I suppose, since it's Monday now. It would be more appropriate to say later last week. So they had a chat about various different things, including NXT, his time
SmackDown.
SmackDown, yeah. His appearances, his work across NXT as it began to grow, including the Brooklyn show last summer. So it'll be very interesting to hear from Mr. Rich Brennan. My mouth is just all over the place today. Mitch Brennan, can't say the right words. I'm just all flabbergasted. It's not everything.
Well, so also, just to clarify, so Rich is going to be in the show today, and we're going to have about 15 minutes of that chat on the show today, but we are going to have the full almost 1 hour of that chat going up on our YouTube channel, which we will post a link to on our Twitter page, @inside_theropes, and on our Facebook page at facebook.com/theinsidenetwork.
Correct. And you can also get us on Twitter at Inside underscore the ropes, at Kenny MC 1985 and at Bertie underscore ITR. That is the place where the conversations are happening, as they were last night, as we tweeted out our thumb reactions to the pay-per-view.
And also, if you've been living under a rock and you don't know, we're bringing Paul Heyman to the UK.
Oh, yeah.
In July.
I almost forgot.
Isn't it funny to live in a world where that's something that you would forget?
I didn't really forget. I wasn't living under a rock or the rock or... Well,
nobody's living under that guy anymore. But, yeah, so he's coming in July. Tickets are, as you are listening to this now, they are on sale for all three cities, all things going according to plan. So if you want to buy tickets for Glasgow, Manchester or London, head over to InsideTheRopes.co.uk. This is Can't Miss.
Yes, it is Can't Miss, and we'll talk more about it later, obviously. But we're going to be back right after this short musical break, a chance for you to perhaps go get yourself a refreshment, a little G&T. Maybe, you know, you're in the bath, you want to just soak up some of those bubbles while you're listening to us. I do know some people do listen to us while they're in the bath. I hope that's the only thing they're doing while they're in the bath.
Still makes me uncomfortable.
Yes. Just
I don't want your genitals out while you listen to us. I just don't want it to
happen. Don't discriminate against genitals. Let your genitals free, folk. Let them hang loose. Hang it everywhere while you're listening to Inside the Ropes. It's a distinctly Boz and Fanny's Out podcast. We'll be back right after this. Blood drips from your camera. It's like a knife held in your hand. What you mad about? I don't know, and I don't give a damn. Break the rules because I can. Let everybody see their future here in me. Just watch the wheel go round. I'm serious, you go down. So, everybody, now that we've all decided whether we're in or out on the genital front, Kenny, do you want to reveal? No, I'm kidding. Right, so, while we recorded our last episode...
My fanny is not out, so don't worry.
Oh, dear. When we recorded our last episode, it broke during that Cody Rhodes had asked for his release from WWE, and... And then over the weekend, he was indeed released, asking you shall receive, as the Lord says. Very Jesus-y, this podcast. I swear to God, bro, I love Jesus. He also released a statement. Once he was gone, he released a statement. And he was talking a little bit about being in the Greensboro Coliseum on Monday, which he thought of a sort of whimsical moment, because he was thinking about Ric Flair performing there, and all that kind of stuff. And he was saying that... You know, he was thinking about Starrcade 83 and, you know, and he was in a bad spot in the company. And he refers to... Well, I'll just tell you some of the things that he says. He said that he was relegated to watching a monitor advertising a returning star. I don't know who he was talking about there, though. Who did they advertise on Monday?
Cena.
Oh, that guy. Yes. And he was kicking open his gear bag to find an outfit he had long outgrown and a face paint kit. So obviously they are slamming Stardust. He said, both Triple H and Vince McMahon have given me many fun and challenging opportunities in my career, and I showed my gratitude by always pushing for the best segment I could create, the most interesting I could generate. They gave me a chance to train on the job with some of the most brilliant minds in wrestling, like Arn Anderson and Fit Finlay. And he talks about the WWE Championship and how his dad never got to win it. And he spent a long time trying to convince Vince and Triple H that he could be that guy, he could be their varsity quarterback, is what he said. And neither of them really saw that in him. He also says, I sincerely appreciate Triple H's unflinching respect for my father and how he has acted as a custodian of history in honouring him since his passing. He said that Triple H said to him, once WWE is a play and everybody has their role and needs to act at their best. And his response to that was, the best actors don't want the lesser roles. He has pleaded with WWE for the past couple of months to ditch the Stardust thing. He said he went to every writer like a door-to-door salesman, giving them the how, what, when, where, why of it. He did thank some people, like Road Dogg and JBL and Cole and people like that, for allowing him to a bit more creative freedom. And then he throws some shade, actually, at the head writers of Raw and SmackDown, who he describes as one pretending to be Brian Gewirtz,
which is Ed Koski, who's the head writer of Raw,
and the other too busy hissing on developmental divas,
which is Ryan Ward, who used to be the head writer on NXT and was promoted to SmackDown a few months ago.
Well, there we go. Thank you for that context. But they didn't get back to him, didn't return his emails or his pitches, and he even said that they would often pretend to ignore him and big leak him when he met them face to face, which is pretty shitty, if you ask me, and it kind of does suggest that maybe the WWE locker room is as toxic as some people say it is sometimes, which is really sad to hear. You know, you don't really like to think of it being like that. And he said, you know, I did everything I could for the last 10 years. They wanted to paint me up like my brother. Chicken shit and chicken salad became a speciality. And we on Inside the Ropes have said for years that Cody's thing is, you know, give him any gimmick and he'll somehow make it work, even the most ridiculous things. It's kind of sad, especially as, well, you know, I'm hoping that we get to talk to Sondra about it. Maybe you'll ask her in our NXT segment a little bit about this. You know, she's a big fan of Stardust. And I wonder how if it taints her love of that character to find out that Cody, especially the last 6 months, grew to resent it so much and didn't really want a part of it. And he was talking about walking down, you know, multiple WrestleManias. He had matches cancelled at WrestleManias.
This is one thing you're saying. What match did he have that was cancelled?
The WrestleMania 29 match, the tag.
Oh, the 8-man tag, right? Or the mixed tag, right? Got you.
Yeah. And he said he had a bag of brass rings and he was never given the opportunity to cash them in. Yeah, and he then starts to, you know, get a little bit angry again, you know, saying, you know, he's very proud of being Cody Rhodes, and also that he'll be damned if his father's legacy is Stardust or a series of sizzle reels for NXT. It's not my job to pick up his sword. It's my privilege. I will miss many of the soldiers in that locker room, some of who I have earned their friendship. Guys like Cesaro, Zack Ryder, Tyler Breeze, Kevin Owens, Luke Harper, Kofi Kingston, Ty Dillinger, The Wasteland, and the NC. I'm not sure who that is. Any idea?
I have no idea who that is.
I don't know who he means there. They keep that locker room clean and they keep having a better match than they're supposed to. I do believe that cream rises and hard work prevails. His work just needs to be elsewhere. And he also says, which I think, one of the things I always have, I don't know your take on this, I always think that wrestlers get too, not all of them, but some of them get a little bit too uppity about being criticised. And Cody actually says, I want to thank both fans and critics of mine alike. There is no greater responsibility than having a fan who expects a level of entertainment from you, and there's nothing more motivating than those who buy a ticket yet find something lacking. Considering the first few creator wrestler years of my career, which made me laugh, because I remember when I first started watching again, people were making that joke that he dressed like a creator wrestler because he didn't have, you know, when you first load that up and it's just like black boots, black trousers, no knee pads and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he thanks everybody. You know, he says, you know, almost a year ago, the biggest light in the sky was ripped away from him. So, you know, he's still very hurt, as you would be from the loss of his dad, which is really sad. You know, he doesn't really seem to have, you know, he has changed, I think, noticeably since that happened, as you would. He says it's not a goodbye. There's a whole world of film and television that you might find he has a knack for. Maybe he even already has an offer. You got to assume that he might go do something with Stephen Amell. You know, they're pals, not just, you know, for the sake of the company. You know, they seem to be friendly. But that's his future. He is a wrestler, and that's what he'll do, wrestle. So I think the answer to a lot of people's question was, is he going to keep wrestling? You know, where does Cody fit in? Don't know the answer to that exactly, but he is going to go somewhere. What's your general take on it? And the fact that, you know, this is, what I find quite interesting is a lot of people, when they talk about CM Punk, they say, you know, oh, you know, he said he wanted to instigate change and all that kind of stuff and blah, blah, blah. And he never did because he went home and yada, yada, yada. And I actually think that one of the things he has done, which I think he started, because I don't think it happened as frequently beforehand, was, I think maybe people saw what he did and realised, you know, you can bite the hand that feeds a little bit when you leave. these younger guys, you know, mm-hmm. if you see something wrong, you know, maybe it is your moral obligation to call them out on it. And sure, maybe your perspective on it is very different to what's actually going on. But it's interesting, you know, we've had Ryback, Wade Barrett, Cody Rhodes, all these guys now who feel like instead of just waiting for the release that they can, you know, grasp a different kind of brass ring and walk out and say, you know, it's these are the problems, these are the reasons I've left. So,
well, I was listening to Dave Meltzer talk about it, and he added a little bit more to it, saying that apparently the plan was that Vince and Triple H had approved him becoming Cody Rhodes again right after WrestleMania.
Right.
Maybe even the next night, and then they pulled it at the last second and said, nah, we're not doing that anymore. And that apparently was like the catalyst for him leaving. There is a thing now with wrestling fans, a lot of wrestling fans, sometimes it's correct, sometimes it's not. I guess it's all in your opinion of, you know, if this guy had been pushed more, he'd have been a world champion. I'm not sure that Cody Rhodes would be. I think Cody Rhodes would have probably been a world champion in the system of having two different belts.
Yeah.
When you have like a world title, but not... But maybe he wasn't given the opportunity as much to... I mean, none of his characters have really been given the chance to get over enough to be in a main event spot, so I can't really judge him on it, but I think he could have been used a lot better. I think that he's excelled in pretty much every role that he's had. Like, one of the things I loved about Stardust at the beginning was, I remember he did an interview with Sam Roberts, and he did it as Stardust.
He committed.
Yeah.
He committed to the character. And I actually think the kind of the run that he had with the Intercontinental title around sort of either side of WrestleMania 28, you know, where he sort of shifted to this real traditional wrestling garb, you know, he changed his look up a little bit. He got the new music. He brought back the white leather strap Intercontinental title. It's just kind of sad to think that, you know, when he was included in matches with the likes of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Cesaro, like these new guys who, for all intents and purposes, you know, that should have been a match that we all wanted to see. You know, when these guys signed, we should have, along with the other ones we listed, you know, given how talented he is, we should have been saying, you know, oh, how good would Sami Zayn versus Cody Rhodes be? Because Cody Rhodes is a really great wrestler, but we never really, we would never look at it like that because, you know, he didn't really get treated that way. And, you know, there's so many people, not everybody gets what they want. And I've even seen some people online say, you know, nepotism got him where he was. He wasn't actually that great. And I would disagree. Like, I think the character thing is, you know, having so many different changes to his character didn't help. You know, it's people need something to grip onto. And he wasn't particularly consistent, which was a shame. But I don't know if I'm sad to see him go, because I think, unfortunately, like a lot of guys from that sort of class of 2007, 2008, you know, him, Ziggler, Swagger, a lot of these guys look a little bit lost in the current WWE roster, where a lot of the incoming sort of independent stars have started to leapfrog over them. It's kind of funny that, you know, 5-6 years ago, everybody was complaining about these cookie-cutter wrestlers, and now all your former Ring of Honor world champions are leapfrogging over them.
I mean, he did have, like you say, you know, when he had the IC title run, that was cut short by the Big Show beating him. That never really sat well with me. I didn't really think the Big Show needed that.
Yeah.
As much. But I think he had good opportunities, and I don't think that he was, like, criminally underused or anything.
No.
I just think he was a guy that wasn't maybe featured as much as he could have been. And I think he was one of those guys, kind of like you say, like, I would imagine, and I have no basis for this opinion, but just from what I've read and heard and stuff, I would imagine that he probably a couple of times was in the running to win Money in the Bank.
Oh,
a couple of times.
You've got to assume so.
He's one of those kind of four or five guys that are always circled as like, we could use this guy. And he just, you know, the day that it came about, they made the decision, they just didn't go with him. You know, it very well could have been him. And then, but if he'd have won it, maybe he'd have got the Sandow treatment. Maybe it would have been worse for him. You just never know. But I think that he's got a bright future ahead of him. He's only 30. I mean, he's younger than us. Which
depressing.
Is depressing. Oh, I've not even done my first WrestleMania yet. And he's had like six.
I know. The dream is real.
I know. But no, I wish him best.
I wish him all the best. And I hope that he finds... I think that what Cody Rhodes, like prime Cody Rhodes should have been, was like your solid mid-card guy, intercontinental level, a guy who was a multi-time intercontinental champion, because he was like the safe pair of hands. When you don't know what to do with that belt, if you don't have anybody, you know, put it on to Cody, because Cody has great matches in the mid-card that keep people excited.
And do you know what I will say? And I'm not just trying to slag him off because I'm not a huge fan of the character, but I think that if Cody Rhodes had had the US title for the last 6 months, it would have felt better than having Kalisto have it.
Yeah.
So, and you know.
I agree. Yeah, he could have had that spot. Why couldn't we have, you know, Cody feuding with Alberto Del Rio? Those matches could have been great, and it could have helped both guys. I mean, Del Rio's getting paid a lot of money, and he looks like shit.
He's on main event.
Well, he doesn't look like shit, like physically, obviously.
He looks great, but
he does look great. I mean, he's portrayed as very much a C level performer now, given how big his comeback was meant to be. But
yeah, I hope he doesn't go to TNA because I just don't think that would help him. But yeah, there's plenty of places.
Didn't Ryback tweet something like,
"Who wants to see Ryborg in the Impact Zone?"
I think he's joking, and the Ryborg thing is quite funny.
Yeah, I like Ryback. But yeah, so I think it's worthy news to talk about, but yeah, he'll be fine. Yeah. But speaking of people who've been released, our guest this week was released.
Good.
But he seems to be okay about it. He had a good run in WWE, and he's here to talk a little bit about it, to talk about being NXT, the growth of it, being, you know, a commentator that... the Brooklyn fans that stole SummerSlam weekend, getting moved up to SmackDown and the main roster and working with Jerry Lawler and Byron Saxton and stuff like that. So plenty to talk about. 15 minutes here and we'll have the full thing on our YouTube channel.
On the YouTube.
And we'll post all the links on social media in the next couple of days. But in the meantime, here is the artist formerly known as Rich Brennan.
What's he known as now?
Rich Bocini.
Oh, I like it. Mr. Bocini.
Here's Rich. And we are back on the show, and I'm very pleased to have our guest with us today. His name is Rich Bocini, but you know him as the WWE's Rich Brennan, and he's here today to talk about his time in WWE, share some stories, have some laughs, and tell us what he's up to now. Rich, how's it going?
Hey, Kenny, how are you, man?
I'm good. Thanks for coming on. I know that you know, you've not really done any of these since you left, so we appreciate you coming on and having a chat with us and talking about your time in the company.
Sure, man. Happy to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you get to WWE and you get the gig, and you go down to Full Sail, I guess. What kind of time? Because that was like 2014, right? That you went to Full Sail.
I came down here. Yeah, it was March. They offered me the job, I think, in January of 2014. But yeah, I ended up moving down to Florida in March of 2014.
So you kind of got there as everything was taken off with the network,
exactly.
And there were, you know, that's when it was kind of, you know, now we're going to have takeover specials and now we're going to, you know, have this weekly show that goes out to the sort of biggest hardcore audience that we have that has the network. What was that whole experience like of getting there, and what was the kind of the atmosphere at Full Sail? Because I guess at that point it would have been a very kind of all hands on deck. We need to make this as big as it can be.
As far as the atmosphere, I mean, it was definitely an exciting time. You know, NXT at that point had, you know, aside from the original NXT, which was what it was, you know, kind of the reboot of NXT was essentially, you know, the continuation of what was Florida Championship Wrestling, which, you know, at the time, developmental territory, you know, live events. There were times that we'd go and do a show and there'd be, you know, 50, 60 people there, which was interesting, you know. But you go to some of these towns, and some of the towns that you go to just, you know, you just wouldn't draw. But as the network started to take off and NXT kind of became its own thing, you started seeing those crowds build up, and you started seeing the passion really, really build up. And, you know, obviously the network had a big thing to do with that. But, you know, even equally so, the performers, I think, that were there at the time definitely resonated with people. You know, you really had the beginnings of the, you know, you had Neville winning the championship. And then from there, you had the Neville, Sami Zayn story. So you had a lot of these things coming together, I think, at the right time. And it just, you know, for lack of a better term, it just exploded. But it was a really exciting time, a really interesting time. and you know, something that I'm you know, happy to have been a part of.
And when, obviously, with NXT and the Performance Center and that sort of stuff, the perception that everyone kind of has is that Triple H has a lot to do with that. When you got there, was he someone that would kind of get involved in helping you with the sort of announcing or the backstage interviewing kind of thing, or was there another team that you would work with a lot more on that?
You know, Triple H oversees the whole thing as far as the day-to-day stuff. You know, he's based in Connecticut, up in Stamford. There's a, you know, a staff of coaches and trainers at the time when I came down. Bill DeMott was the head coach, and you know, there's some of the other coaches there. Robbie Brookside has been there the whole time. Terry Taylor has been there. Billy Gunn was there for a bit. Matt Bloom is now the head coach. You know, and guys are literally in the ring. You know, there are different classes set up. They're in the, you know, 2-3 hours a day. Then they have time in the gym. And then there's promo class, which, you know, for a long time, Dusty Rhodes ran that. You know, as far as the announcers go, there's, you know, there's a VO room that's there that you can go in and practice calling matches. And, you know, I'd spend hours a day in there with, you know, with Corey Graves or, you know, at times some of the other talent as well. And we would just call matches and work on our craft. You know, for me, Michael Cole was my main point of contact there. And he was really the guy that was, you know, coaching me and coaching the other announcers and just really making sure that ship ran straight.
And how was your relationship with Michael Cole in terms of how, what kind of teacher he was to you? Was he very supportive of you? Because I guess the one thing that I noticed when I would watch NXT is that your approach on NXT would be a lot more about calling the match and calling the moves, whereas on, you know, when he works on Raw, obviously he's got a lot more to you know, he's got to talk about product placement of things, he's got to talk about the network all the time, he's got to talk about all these different things as well as calling the action. How did he sort of help you in your approach?
You know, it was the idea for NXT, for the product and, you know, and for the announcing style to be, you know, kind of more of a hybrid of what they do on Raw. You know, Raw is a very, it's a very different animal. You know, you just mentioned a lot of the things, you know, product placements and different things like that. It's more of a general entertainment program as opposed to, you know, NXT, which is, you know, it's, you know, for lack of a better term, it's more of a wrestling show, you know? So, you know, I just kind of went in with my own style. I naturally tend to, you know, be more, you know, more inclined to call the action. But that said, you know, with wrestling, there has to be a story to the match, even if it's a cold match, you know, hopefully the guys are telling a good story in the ring and you can kind of tell that story. But, you know, generally speaking, you know, you need to have a good story. So, you know, so anybody that says, like, well, you know, on Raw or whatever, they don't call enough moves or whatever. I mean, that's definitely, you know, that's a thing you hear all the time. And, you know, it's valid in some ways. But really, at the end of the day, it's wrestling, and you need to tell a story, because if you don't have a story behind the match, then what does it mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And what was your memory of sort of your first takeover special and your, cause I mean, it feels exactly like a pay-per-view in a lot of senses. You know, it's on the network, it's being built up, there's a pre-show with a panel. It's very similar. What was your first experience like of doing that, the lead up to it? And actually doing it, and how you felt afterwards?
Well, you know, the first, you know, I was around, I was actually at Arrival. I had just started with the company. That was, you know, February of 2014. I had just been offered the job, and actually, you know, came over to Florida for that. So I was there for that. You know, I was backstage at, you know, the other takeovers, leading up to the first one that I did, which is Takeover Our Evolution in December 2014. And so remember, you know, obviously there, you know, there were some nerves, being nervous and, you know, but again, you know, the stories told themselves in a lot of ways, you know, the main story there being Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville. And that was such a, you know, an interesting story, one that really resonated. and you know, they killed it in the ring that night. I mean, that was an incredible match. It was a very emotional match. You know, it was you know, when it was all said and done, you know, it for me, honestly, it was very cathartic in a lot of ways for a lot of different reasons. You know, being able to call that victory for Sammy, calling the championship win, you know, what that meant to the fans, and it was a great feeling. I mean, the lead up to it, there was, you know, a lot of work that went into it, obviously, you know, on everybody's end. For me, you know, I just tried to focus, you know, going into it, focus on the story. And then, you know, once we were there, you know, we were told that night, you know, just call the match, you know, the story's told, you know, there's a package before the match that you're going to see, call the match. And that's, you know, that's what we did.
One of the things that must have been a really cool part of your career in WWE was, and I was actually there as a fan in the building, was NXT TakeOver Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like, because you guys had done, you know, you did the show at WrestleMania Weekend in San Jose where there was like 5,000 people or something, or 4,000 people. But this was, yep, like in the Barclays Center in New York, sold out, 13,000, and you're the lead commentator that night. And you get, you know, the Bayley versus Sasha match, which, you know, is probably one of the best women's matches of all time.
Yep.
Balor and Owens. What was that experience like? Because that must have just been like, you know, whatever you've done so far is not going to prepare you for this, because this is just going to be a million miles away.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the TakeOver shows in particular, there's a certain energy. Everybody really stepped up their game for those. Not that they didn't, or we didn't at TV, but again, you know, it's a different atmosphere. It's, you know, like a game seven, mm-hmm, in the playoffs, you know, that's what it's like. I just remember that weekend, that SummerSlam weekend being, it was a bit of a blur because there was so much going on. You know, it's one of those things when you walk out and you look and, you know, you see this building is just jammed, and not only packed, but everybody, again, you can really feel the energy in the place. Because you can sometimes walk into a building that's packed and it's, you know, the excitement level's not really there. I mean, it was just off the charts at TakeOver Brooklyn. You know, once you kind of settle in and, you know, for me anyway, you know, you get in there, you put the headset on, I don't want to say you settle down a little bit, because you still know what the moment is, and, you know, you're definitely up for the moment, but it's kind of one of those things that, you know, you get in there and, you know, you're focused on what you're doing. You're focused on, you know, your focus is on calling the show, calling the match, and I don't want to say you tune everything out, because you're definitely aware, you know, especially as an announcer with a crowd like that, you need to be aware of the crowd and, you know, when to not speak so the crowd comes through and the people at home can feel that and hear that. But, you know, it's one of those things, and you'll hear athletes say it all the time, you know, you go out into a big game, a pressure-filled game or whatever, there's definitely nerves and excitement leading up to it. But, you know, as soon as the puck drops or, you know, kickoff or whatever, once you kind of get into the flow of the game, you're in the game and you're not necessarily thinking about everything else. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. It totally does. And I also wonder, like, with that, so, I mean, obviously you're going to be getting feedback all the time on, you know, your performance and commentary and all that sort of stuff, but was there more of a pressure with TakeOver, knowing that, like, Vince is there and, you know, it's SummerSlam weekend, so everybody's kind of around, there's maybe more eyes on it and more people listening or watching? Was that something that got in your head, or were you just kind of, did that motivate you to just, you know, do the job more?
I think at times it probably got in my head a little bit, but, you know, again, you know, I never really worried necessarily, like, who was there or who was around. I just tried to go out and do the best job that I could do. You know, and definitely, I mean, you know, in there's all, it's WWE, it's a very pressure filled environment, especially for a commentator, because you are, and for everybody, really, I mean, everybody's constantly getting feedback. Not all of it's good all the time either, because the expectation levels are so high. You know, so you're always being critiqued, and that can, I can get to you a little bit at times, but it, you know, at the end of the day, it's about making the product better and putting out the best show possible. But you know, as far as me, you know, I never really worried about who was around. I you know, whether Vince was watching or whoever, I just tried to go out and do what I do to the best of the ability that I could. And, you know, did I succeed in that? Sometimes maybe not, but, you know, I'm happy with what I accomplished there.
And then obviously you ended up coming up to the main roster and going to SmackDown. Can you talk a little bit about how that came about, how you ended up going up there, and sort of your reaction to going there as well?
Well, you know, it was not too long after TakeOver R Evolution. They called me up to the road February of 2015, and at first I started off just doing Superstars, which they you know, they tape it before Raw, some two matches, a couple of on cams. So at first I was just doing that, and then not too long after that they said, well, okay, well now we're gonna have you do Main Event and Superstars. And, okay, great. And just kept doing what I was doing. Next thing I know, he told me, hey, we're gonna put you on SmackDown. So I mean, it was definitely a, you know, kind of a tornado. You know, things happened very, very quickly. You know, if I'm being completely honest, I probably would have preferred to keep doing NXT for a while. You know, keep doing Main Event and Superstars, and just kind of continuing to learn the process, especially at that level. Because again, there really is so much that goes into it. You know, but obviously somebody gives you an opportunity to do SmackDown, or, you know, whatever, you take the opportunity. I did it. I don't have any regrets. I think I did a, you know, a decent job.
Is that something again that Michael Cole is kind of coaching you on going on to SmackDown and some of the extra things that you probably have to do on that show that you might not have had to do on NXT, other things that you might need to consider talking about and stuff?
Yeah, you know, Cole was, you know, pretty much the guy that I dealt with the most, as far as producing me and that type of stuff, producing the announcers. You know, there were times that, you know, that I'd hear from Vince, you know, for instance, the Madison Square Garden show that I did, which was awesome. Great experience doing that. You know, Vince was producing that show, which was cool. You know, it's, you know, I think I might have mentioned this before, you know, doing NXT and doing SmackDown are, you know, they're two completely different things. You call the show differently. You know, doing Main Event is different than doing Superstars. Doing Superstars is different from all the other shows, the way that you have to call it and the way that you do things. Again, you know, I really feel I did my best work at NXT. You know, it is what it is. I, you know, I'm really appreciative having the opportunity to do the things that I did. Obviously, not everybody gets the opportunity to do SmackDown. I'll always be appreciative for that. It was an awesome experience. You know, now it's, you know, for whatever reason, it's on to the next thing.
So thank you to the artist formerly known as Rich Brennan. What's his new name again?
Rich Boccini.
Richa Boccini. Oh, he did this. What am I talking about? I'm talking shit. Right, so Extreme Rules happened last night. We're going to talk about that now. I'm a little bit of a giddy person this afternoon. I have no idea why, but I am. So we obviously went out to watch Extreme Rules and walk about in Glasgow, which was fun, apart from the morons who were shouting lots of... Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with shouting when you're at the wrestling, because that's what you do.
But there's a guy behind us, right? And I need to be very careful about how I say this. He's clearly someone that gets looked after.
That's,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yes. That was very... that was a nice euphemism, yes.
He's not someone who goes day-to-day in life without guidance, right?
From our Lord.
Maybe. And we're at, like, if MD's been in Walkabout in Glasgow, we are in the kind of, like, the little sort of, like, mosh pit area almost.
In front of the big screen.
In front of the big screen. So, like, for whatever reason, we just walked in and those seats were available, even though, like, the rest of the place was
the place. So we were like, oh, what, I wonder why, oh, what's wrong with these seats? Why wouldn't anybody want to sit there? And it's because right behind you is a guy with a voice like a foghorn. Every time there is even like a hint of AJ Styles, a flick of that Farrah Fawcett haircut, he's like,
AJ Styles!
AJ Styles! And it's really loud, and he just goes on and on and on and on. And I don't think, I mean, I know you're trying to say he's, you know, looked after. I don't think he was, I just think he was drunk. And he just kept...
He didn't look...
Someone called a doctor.
He looked a few slices short of a loaf.
You're really knocking these... euphemisms out of the park today.
Just desperately trying to not say anything that would make me look in bad taste.
Oh, really? Anyone monitoring Kenny's Twitter page last night knows that he doesn't always have that filter. So Extreme Rules. Well,
are you going to also mention about how you thought it was hilariously funny that two people recognised me and you took great pleasure in laughing in my face?
I didn't laugh at your face. We were just, you know, appalled that... I was like, oh, don't worry, guys. He's just one crack addiction and a celebrity Big Brother appearance away from sliding down the celebrity pit. Oh, God. I would definitely vote to keep you in that house.
I can't remember how this ever came up, but I remember one of my friends was saying to me, like, would you ever do Big Brother? Like, would you ever do that show? And I was like, well, no, I just wouldn't... I don't have any desire to do it, but I said the one thing I think
the that normal would, version though he wasn't talking about the celebrity.
No, not the celebrity, the normal version.
Jesus
and
Christ.
I said, but the thing about it is, I think one of the things that I would be good at in that show unintentionally is I can't hide my facial expressions with how I feel about something. So even if I'm not say it, like I roll my eyes more than anybody else that I know. Anything makes me roll. So I feel like I would get caught with a lot of really bad facial expressions. So
I'm kind of the same. Somebody, a friend of mine said that my face is like I'm in an episode of The Office. Like, so when people say things, like, I'll turn and, like, sort of as if there's a camera going, and like raise my eyebrows and stuff. He's like, watching your face sometimes when you're around people is like you're being filmed for like a documentary or something because you're always kind of looking away going, for fuck's sake. So that would be great when me and you end up on YouTube videos.
You do that, yeah.
What?
You do.
Anyway.
So Extreme Rules, we didn't get a chance to see the pre-show and we're going to talk more about it in full later on in the week. But I guess we can just touch a couple of topics here.
Yeah, because the thing is we're going to... Yeah, there's definitely a few matches I want to rewatch. There's definitely one I do not want to rewatch. And... I'll probably check out the pre-show as a burgeoning fanboy for Banter Corbin. So we'll see what happens there. But we will talk about it in full. This is, like I said, this is the hot take. Maybe that's what we'll officially call this Monday pay-per-view ramble. Rambling away.
This Thursday will be the first time the four of us have all been able to do the round table.
Exactly. It's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. But, so just generally, WrestleMania... payback for at least both of us was a two thumbs right up. Do you think Extreme Rules has carried on the WWE's trend of being generally quite enjoyable? Not perfect, not, you know, 2000 great, but since WrestleMania, I think generally WWE has been maybe not firing on all cylinders, but, you know, firing on at least 9 of 12.
it feels fresh, it feels new, it feels like it's not the same product we've watched the last 10 years.
It's a new era, yes it is.
I don't think they knocked it out of the park, Extreme Rules, but I do think that it was a good show.
With two very good matches on it, I think.
Well, I think there was two excellent matches on it. Like, I would go, like, excellent matches, but I think the thing is, there are some matches on the show that I don't think were that great, but I think that they served the purpose of what they were there to do. Like, you know, New Day and Vaudevillains wasn't really that exciting, but it was fine.
Yeah, it was enjoyable.
And the right decision was there. Now, it's funny, because when we got back, I always kind of, like, there's a few, like, different, like, Twitter handles or websites that I usually check. Like, one of the things I check after a pay-per-view or a Raw is ProWrestling.net, because they do like a report of Raw, and after every segment they put like a analysis bit, and I always like reading those wee bits of analysis just to see what the consensus is. And I was reading through it, and I knew that the Ambrose-Jericho match had went long, and I was like, we weren't into it.
Yeah, it felt long, like, and I wasn't really into it. No.
We were just, you know, the banter was slow, and we were just chatting away, and like, I think that was the sign, like, we were all, we, you know, it was three of us, and we were all chatting and quite drunk, but we were watching the show. But like, for the IC four-way, we were all glued to that.
Yeah, for
Ambrose-Jericho, we were just like, meh, but I didn't realise it went 27 minutes.
Wow. Was it that long? See, that's the one I don't want to rewatch. So
It went longer than Hell in a Cell at WrestleMania.
Wow.
Which was 25 minutes.
So one of the things I want to... I just want to specifically focus in on this. So we'll talk about the match and the implications for Jericho and Ambrose, because, you know, Ambrose is a guy that constantly feels like after every pay-per-view, it's like, well, what's he doing now, this sort of broken character? Maybe we'll focus a little bit more on that once we've seen Raw and we have the context for the roundtable on Thursday. But one of the things I want to talk about is the spot with the thumbtacks. Because when the thumbtacks came out, my sort of wrestling brain said, maybe Ambrose will go through this, because maybe they feel like he needs to be the guy that sort of takes a crazy bump onto the thumbtacks because he's like a lunatic. But Jericho took the bump, and like, mad props to Jericho for doing it. But there was a sort of, and this is kind of strange, this is, to me, this is a little bit like Shane's cage dive, where instead of being like, oh my god, I can't believe that happened, I was kind of going, oh, did he really need to do that? Like, and Jericho, you know, he's in his 40s, he doesn't have anything left to prove to anybody. Like, we know, I mean, well, maybe he did earlier this year when he was boring babyface Jericho, but, you know, once he turned heel, we were all like, oh yeah, 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 we know how good you can be. And I just, like, really, it's like a 40-plus-year-old Chris Jericho getting dumped in thumbtacks, something that people want to see. I mean, people obviously reacted loudly on the show, and where we were, people were like, oh, my God! And, you know, there was the photo of him and Mick Foley backstage afterwards. You know, so, you know, again, not taking anything away from Jericho. But I was just like, really, does he have to be doing this sort of shit at this point?
I think the problem was that the match... Like, on paper, you think Dean Ambrose and Chris Jericho would be great. And you actually, you made a really good point last night, which I hate to admit. But you'd said...
I don't even remember what this is, so I hope it is good.
It is good. I remember you turned around and you went, you know, if somebody had told me when Dean Ambrose was in The Shield that he would have a match with Chris Jericho on pay-per-view and I'd be bored out my tits, you said I wouldn't have believed you. And yeah.
I was more looking forward to Roman Reigns' match.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because... And then I would be like, with AJ Styles, you say, stop talking nonsense.
But I think that the match just didn't feel like, it didn't feel like anybody really wanted to see it. And I totally get Sondra's point where she was saying, you know, the asylum aspect is like crazy and, you know, silly music and stuff. But it was like, you know, WCW TNA kind of stuff. It wasn't great. The thumbtacks thing, like, it felt like a spot because it was Extreme Rules. It didn't feel like a spot because that was where the feud naturally took it. And that's the problem. Because you can't have a feud that begins over a plant.
Yeah, like, guys, the plant pot was hanging from this fucking asylum.
See
if TNA had done this, right? See if TNA had a feud that involved a plant pot. And they put a plant pot on the roof of Lethal Lockdown. Twitter would have been ablaze with the most vitriolic, acidic, nasty comments. And, you know, these guys are getting a bit of a pass for this stuff. And I'm like, I don't really like it. And I kind of wish Jericho was... I mean, it's clearly not happening. I don't think I'm going to get my Jericho-Roman Reigns one-monther, no. Which is a shame. But, I mean, unless, you know... Rollins feuds with Styles first, and maybe Roman's got a free month. But
or if Rollins goes into Money in the Bank,
yeah, that's entirely possible. But we'll talk about him in a wee second. But yeah, I just don't know what's happening to me. I wonder if I'm just becoming like middle aged, where I see people jumping off sales instead of losing my mind. I'm just going, I don't know if that was really necessary.
Well, it's because when it used to happen originally, like when Foley went off the set and all that sort of stuff, you hadn't seen it before, and it was kind of fresh. But now, like, there's been extreme rules pay-per-views for 7 years. Yeah. There's been 40 Hell in a Cell matches, like everything that can be done to the human body that's not like making you kill yourself has been done. So when you see things like this, where Jericho, you know, major props to him for taking the spot. But I just feel like if he was going to do that, he should have kept it for something that was a bit of a hotter feud, because this just wasn't anywhere near. And 27 minutes was so long. I mean, I can't imagine why anybody thought that this should go 27 minutes. So
it felt long. I mean, that's the one that I probably will not rewatch.
I'm gonna try rewatching it just to say that I've tried. If I'm going to watch the rest of it back, I may as well give it a go. But yeah, it will be through gritted teeth that I do.
Like, if I'm lying on my side and my arm's trapped under the weight of my own body and I'm starting to get pins and needles and I'm like, oh, I can't reach for the remote, maybe then I'll watch it. But only under those very specific circumstances. One of the things going into the pay-per-view we were concerned about, I know our pal David J. McCutcheon was concerned about this, was that the presentation of those magic killers themselves, the Not Bullet Club, Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows, or Luke Gallows, I guess. I keep calling him Doc Gallows, but it's Luke Gallows in WWE now, isn't it? But back to beating that, I should say. And obviously they went over the Usos, and I thought a pretty strong opening contest, the Tornado. Sorry, I went to say Texas Tornado because I saw on Twitter that Michael Cole made some really goofy statement about, or did you know that the Texas Tornado tag match originated in Texas? Or something like that. And people were like, oh, geez, really? Anyway. But yeah, I thought that was kind of fun. And although it wasn't, you know, it was pretty equal. You know, the Usos got a lot of offense and stuff. They did have a pretty convincing win. Gallows and Anderson, that is. And I was glad to see that. I was glad to see that they got that win. I'm sure you were too. In fact, I know you were because I was with you.
I thought that I enjoyed the opening tag match. I thought it was the right result. I was very interested that the Usos got booed as heavily as they did.
Yeah, it's the black ball of charisma.
I didn't think they were. Like, I thought people kind of like, because sometimes I think that I'm maybe too harsh on things. Like you know, I don't look at things from a sort of casual fan's perspective. I looked at it from more of a, I've watched this stuff for like 20 years.
Well, I think that you've been harsh on the Usos for quite a long time, but everybody's just kind of coming round to your opinion now. Like, there were times where you would like be kind of quite mean to them, and I always felt like going, oh, they're not that bad. Like, they're a bit generic, but they're fun. And now I'm slowly starting to be like, yeah, Kenny, you're right. They're shit. But they're not, but they're just...
Well, you know, because somebody
you can tell they're definitely related to Roman Reigns. They're fucking boring.
Well, somebody quite rightly called me out on one of my opinions on Twitter, because when I did the Wrestle Culture podcast this week for What Culture, I was quite tough on Kalisto, the character.
Kalisto, who blocked you on Twitter.
Who, exactly. But, you know, all that joking aside, I just don't think he's an interesting character. And you know, the argument that I was given by Adam Blompey when I was doing the podcast was, you know, well, it's not his fault. And I was like, yeah, but like, so if I watch a TV show, you know, if I watch The Blacklist and James Spader is shite in it, I'm not going to go, well, you know, I'm going to give James Spader a free pass. It's clearly just the writing. You're going to go, he was shit in that. That's what you do. You look at the performance of something, and rightly or wrongly, you judge the person or who's playing the character. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but with people like Kalisto and the Usos, I feel like their issue is that they don't have characters that are that exciting, and I'm kind of irritated that I'm meant to just be like, okay, you know, they can just be like rubbish characters and it's fine. Like, I need more, you know, especially when you've watched wrestling for a long time. I think that you do need more. You need more to hook you to things. You just need more. And that rubs some people up the wrong way. But, well, like with Kalisto, to defend him, I actually thought that I really enjoyed the way he worked at the pay-per-view last night. I thought thought the story of how he kind of like, you know, he was just constantly using his agility and speed to try and, you know, outdo Rusev, because he knew he couldn't compete with him for strength. And I appreciated that and I enjoyed it. But at the same time, I think it was absolutely the right decision for Rusev to get the belt back, not just because I love him with all my heart. But
yeah, well, I thought what's quite interesting is that, obviously, Rusev, to use the modern parlance of the youths, Rusev is your bae. And that could also be the acronym for best accolade ever.
That's true. That is very true.
That accolade at the end of the match bent him right back over, and he tapped right away. Was people like in Walkabout were like, "Oh my god!" They're like, "That's insane," and it was great.
Yeah, I thought that. I can't decide whether I like it yet or not. I need to go back and watch it, but I don't know how I feel about John Cohen, the referee, like almost stopping Rusev for a little while, but then allowing it to happen. I feel like I had to go one way or the other.
Yeah, I thought so too, because I said to you, because obviously we had predicted opposite results here. I had said, I think Kalisto's going to win, and I wouldn't, but I'm not going to be happy about it. And then when that started happening and Rusev was kind of pushing him out the way and stuff, I remember turning to you and being like, oh my god, it's going to be a DQ, which is even worse, because that means we're going to get another month of this. But no, it is not the case. So I don't know where Rusev goes, but I'm happy he's going with gold around his waist. Maybe we can just pretend that all of last year didn't happen. You know, the horrible love triangle, the League of Nations. I mean, we all love the lads, but...
You know, the lads.
But it's maybe back to... Well, back to his best form, maybe?
Yeah. Let's quickly talk about the main event very quickly before we go. We can talk about the rest of the show on...
Obviously, guys, if you're like, oh, we want to hear more thoughts about Extreme Rules, and it's like, look, we know. But you can get it on Thursday when we do a roundtable, which will be, you know, probably at least 90 minutes, if not longer. We'll really get into the matches. We'll get into how the sort of the fallout segments on Raw, where everybody went after the matches, because we sort of decided in the last sort of 2-3 months that we think a real, real valuable pay-per-view review in full takes Raw into account, because sometimes you can only really appreciate a match with its storyline context from the next night. So that'll be coming your way Thursday. But yeah, AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, versus Roman Reigns, the guy, which is still, I mean, people are complaining about the club. At least you're not the guy. Like, what was his nickname? I prefer Juggernaut. What happened to Juggernaut?
What happened to Sucker and Succotash?
Well. Anyway, so here's the thing. I have got a feeling that when it comes to recording on Thursday, I might have different feelings about this match. At the moment, with only one watch, which was, you know, through considerable beer goggles, I definitely enjoyed it as much as their match last month. And I was really into it, you know, again, 2 months in a row. We really bit for those near falls. I thought AJ looked fantastic. Roman did well as well. That sounded like such a bitchy thing to say. AJ looked fantastic. Roman did well. He turned up. He took part, and that's what matters. No, it was good. And then the schmoz with the tag guys, the Usos, and the club, and blah blah blah, and the brah, blah, blah, and then obviously the finish. And the thing was, is it really felt again like AJ was going to win. And the bit where AJ single-handedly, although those hands that contain a steel chair, took out the Usos and Roman. Like, I was loving it, because AJ was swinging for the fences. He was going, like, douche, 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 all three guys in a row until they were down. And then he hit the Styles Clash. And that was not enough to put Roman away, when I thought it really was, because that really fit. You know, that reminded me of, I remember Austin at the end of WrestleMania 17. I don't know if you've heard of that pay-per-view. Like, you know, where he batters The Rock with the chair. Yeah. And he didn't hit Roman that many times, but, you know, he did. He probably delivered that many shots between the three guys, and I thought, shit, like, this is it. And then Roman still managed to win, and with a spear that was not a great spear. Like, I just think that, you know, if you do a spear, you're either, you know, Goldberg or Rhino, you know, good spears, or you're Edge, kind of weak flying hug spears. And I think Roman, more often than not, leans towards the weak flying hug. And in this case, you know, he was taking him down from his own momentum, because AJ was going for the flying forearm, and, you know, we just called it. We were like, oh, he's going to speed him on the way down, and that'll be it. And in the moment, my gut reaction was, I don't think it took enough to put him down. And then I saw some people on Twitter saying that actually, you know, Roman had put him through tables, and he had already speared him previously, and blah, blah, blah. But then I was kind of thinking, oh, but, you know, AJ was on fire right before this. It seemed like he'd really gotten his adrenaline back. Was this move enough to put him down? And then I remember seeing Roman at the end of the match. And again, you know, Roman doesn't get, I don't think he gets enough credit for his selling. He really sold. And the thing with Roman, again, is I feel maybe I'm wrong, but if you go back and watch the Triple H match at WrestleMania, the last AJ match and this match, I really think what they're trying to do with Roman is say that this guy is, he can take a beating. Maybe as far back as the Lesnar match at WrestleMania 31. But his whole thing is he can really absorb a lot of punishment, because he spends a lot of his matches looking like a guy that's had his ass kicked. You know, he stumbles around. At the end of the matches, he's always sitting there like, fucking hell, like, I've just taken a beating. But he's, like, got a couple of big power moves. And if the whole purpose here is to build Reigns up as a guy who, yes, he's got a limited moveset, but he's got an incredible threshold for pain and sustaining a beating, and he does have pretty much, you know, nuclear bomb finishing moves that can take out anybody. I think the real question, I was thinking about this afternoon, if this match was AJ Styles and Brock Lesnar, and Brock Lesnar, you know, took all that stuff from Styles, and then, you know, one F5 took out AJ, I don't think people would be complaining. And I know that the counter would be, yeah, but he's Brock Lesnar, and Roman Reigns is Roman Reigns. And I'm going like, yeah, I know, but they want Roman Reigns to be their guy. And if they, I mean, I don't necessarily like that he's the guy. He's not my guy. But I guess I can't really fault them if they're, because, I mean, at least this is more of a consistent character and push for him than he's had in the past. You know, he went through periods in the last 18 months where they really made him look like an idiot. And they're not doing that now. They're making him look like a world beater. They're really building him up as this unbeatable guy who can sustain, you know, incredible assaults and still come back and hit you with his big bombs at the end and take you out. And it might not be to everybody's tastes, but I think there is a creative purpose behind what they're doing. And I hope I'm not, like I said, on Friday's show or Saturday's show, you know, been in the trenches so long, I don't care that my feet are rotting off, and I'm just kind of making excuses for what they're doing with Roman, because I don't want to admit that, you know, maybe they're making AJ look rubbish, but I don't think they did make AJ look rubbish. I would have preferred a stronger finish from Reigns. Like, I would like AJ to kick out of that one, the spear, and then Roman hits another one, or a powerbomb or something. Like, just that one change would have made me a little bit happier. But then, that's me speaking as a big fucking AJ Styles mark. But ultimately, in terms of the story of the match, maybe they are telling a good story with Roman. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I think they are telling a better story with him for sure. I liked it when he came out for the main event, that when he was getting booed, he kind of gave like a smug grin to the crowd. Like, he's acknowledging it, you know, he's not...
Yeah, I think he's been a lot better since WrestleMania.
Yeah, he's no longer the Roman Reigns that has to come out and go, oh, come on, guys, please just cheer me. I'm supposed to be the good guy. You know, now he's like, I'll just do what I do. And if you like me, great. And if you don't, fuck you. You know, I don't care. I don't like that as a long-term character, because that's what John Cena was. And that's not my favourite way to enjoy wrestling. Like,
Me neither.
I prefer to have a true babyface and a true heel. But that's, you know...
Am I wrong in thinking that, basically, what a lot of people are complaining about is... Oh, you know, the company are trying to build a number one babyface by making him look really strong, giving him big wins, making him look like a fighting champion, make his finisher look deadly. And I just think that in any other... If they were doing that with anybody else, I think people would be more forgiving of it than they are because it's Roman. And...
Well, I also think that the one thing about AJ's performance that nobody can deny, whether you are a fan of AJ Styles or not, or you know, hate Roman Reigns or not, like, AJ Styles, I thought, looked tremendous in this match. Like, he looked like he took everything to Roman Reigns. And the one thing that I would have liked to have seen differently, I'm trying to not really hit the finish too much, because I'm going to watch it back before I really sort of say whether I'm totally cool with it or not. But when he hit the Styles Clash on the chair, and then he went for the pinfall and one of the Usos grabbed him.
Yeah.
I felt like I liked that spot, and I liked the idea that the Uso saved the title for him, and that was what the commentary team told you. But the problem was, is that in reality, within 5 seconds, AJ Styles was back to pin Roman Reigns, and he'd just been style clashed on a chair. So for me, I needed that to be like a 30-second thing, or like a 1-minute thing where he's fighting off the Usos to try and run back into that ring, because that move that he just hit on that chair, he's won the belt if he can just get that pinfall.
But I think I agree with you, but I think it is fair to say to the, in terms of the stuff that we're criticizing, we are getting right into the, you know, the little details. But on the whole, this was a great main event. I mean, I would take the last two main events over just about anything they've done, you know, last year.
I think this is the first time since the kind of, and I don't want to say this like lightly, but I think it's the first time since like Daniel Bryan was on top, or Punk and Cena were having the matches, where there's this like really big fight feel to these two guys who are like,
I want to see it. I mean, I said last week, it's so unlikely. Like, I would never have believed you if you told me a couple of months ago that, hey, you know, you're going to think of AJ Styles and Roman Reigns the way that you think of Punk and Cena, or you know, Bret and Stone Cold Steve Austin, where you would... Now, I'm not saying that they've had matches. Well, maybe I am saying, but they have been pretty good. You know, people are kind of afraid to say, you know, that was as good as this heralded match. But I mean that the comparison is that I would quite happily watch these guys come back to each other many times over the next couple of years and have main events with each other, because I just think they click. And they're an unlikely pairing. You know, that really Roman Reigns and AJ Styles are having these belting matches, but they are, and
I'm intrigued to see where AJ Styles goes next.
Yeah, I am too, because I think they've made him look great, and our argument is, you know, and I think we both stand by this, is that they've brought him in, and unlike anybody they brought in before, they've really made him look like a top star over the last couple of months. But this is, you know, I feel like he is going to transition away. Is he going to be in Money in the Bank, which would be, you know, a good place for him, because he's a spot guy. Well, he's not. No, I don't mean it like that. That's, God, people are going to crucify me for that.
I mean, he's the sort of guy that could do that kind of match well.
Yeah, he can perform in these types of matches and give you memorable moments. Is he going to be the guy to carry the briefcase with the club at his back? That would be interesting.
I do know that for some of the house shows for June, they're advertising some of the main events as 6-man tags with the club, AJ and the club, against Reigns, Ambrose, and Cena.
Interesting.
So I don't know. I mean, maybe that means it's a Cena AJ program. Maybe it means it's a Cena club program. But I'm intrigued to see where they go. And I think there's, you know, the reason we do these roundtables 3 or 4 days after is because when you try and analyze a pay per view fully the day after the show, it's kind of impossible because Raw is such a big part of how things play out.
Yeah.
But I do want to know, I mean, I know what you think by the beginning of the show, but the return of Seth Rollins, how it was done, what it means, where he goes, how he was presented, what are your kind of just, you know, having seen it once and had a day
see,
to
live. See, before I answer that question, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Is it make or break for AJ Styles to win his next pay-per-view match? Because he obviously lost the Royal Rumble. He beat Jericho, and then he lost at WrestleMania, and he's lost twice to Roman Reigns. But I just think that this is one of the ones where, annoyingly, the argument that wins and losses are not the most important thing, which I have rallied against quite a fair bit, I just feel like even in his losses, AJ is managing to still look great. In my eyes, I know people are going to roll their eyes at my eyes, but I'm sort of like, I'd like to see him win if he goes on to feud with, you know, whoever next, or if they do like a 6-man at the pay-per-view, that I'd like to see the club win that.
Yeah, I think he does need to win something soon.
Yeah.
Like that's one of the reasons that I wouldn't be crazy about him going straight into a program with Cena, because obviously we know how that goes.
We know how that one goes. But what do you think? Rollins' return. You know, it had been rumored during the day that it might be happening, and then I kind of had this thing where I thought, yeah, but don't they tend to do these things on Raw now, you know? But they did something that I've wanted them to do quite a number of times, where I've sometimes gone, oh, can you just done that in the pay-per-view to make everything feel really special? And that's usually because the main event sucked, and now I feel like I was, you know, spoiled because I had a great main event. And then I got a nice wee cherry on top at the end with Rollins coming back. So I don't know if it was the most creatively interesting. I mean, it was you know, if you were to put a list of suggestions on a whiteboard for how to bring back Seth Rollins, I imagine what they did would be number one or two. You know, runs out, attacks Roman Reigns, holds the belt over him. Not the most original, but by God, if I wasn't just fucking really happy to see him. And I missed it. I mean, you know, maybe I was like, oh, I didn't come, you know, the music didn't hit or anything, but the crowd reaction was insane. And now, even though I'm up very, very early tomorrow to travel, I am like, I need to watch Raw tonight. Like, I need to see at least the first, at least the open, to see what's going on, because I want to know. I want to know what he's doing, because, and that's the thing that's perfect about it being so simple. Although I could be like, oh, they could have done this, could have done that. You know, so many questions, because he came out, massive reaction from the fans, doesn't have his blonde streak back in. I know some people will be concerned about that, some of the ladies. I actually have, well, hold on, I'll find this and read it to you. But, yeah, I mean, it was fine. I mean, he hit the pedigree, so is he still using the pedigree? Is Triple H going to have something to say about that? Because I thought he only used that, you know, because he was Triple H's boy. And he seems to be wanting to go after the world title, but is he going to get a shot? What are Shane and Stephanie going to have to say about it?
The key as well is something that they did on commentary, which I was very happy about. Because I unashamedly watched the return this morning. Do you know what I mean? Because I had to watch it again. Just that end. But and on commentary, as soon as he picks up the belt, they go, "That's Seth Rollins, former WWE World Heavyweight Champion." And then they said, "You know, the man that wasn't beaten for the championship, the man who had to relinquish it because of injury," and that's key as a point. Like, I'm so glad they brought that up, and I know it's very
right away. That's the agenda right away.
But that has to be it, you know.
But Kenny, what happens if you just go straight into a program with Roman Reigns and he loses?
I mean, I'm curious. I said this before about, you know, Roman Reigns' opponent. I mean, it goes against.
Are they going to try and make him a heel as well? Sorry, so many questions. So many questions.
It goes against everything that I think is. Should wrestling should be all about, but I guess if I've still got it in the undercard, I can deal with it. But like, I quite like the dynamic of Roman Reigns against fan favorites.
He's killing the internet, guys.
So I like the idea, like him and Rollins. Like, people are gonna go crazy for Rollins. I like the idea of those matches. You know, I love the idea that, like, you know, maybe, I mean, I don't know if they would do this, but like, I'd love to see the tease of Rollins try to set him up for a curb stomp.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't have to do it.
Can I read out a message, though? This is my friend Sarah, you know Sarah, of Mitchell and McInnes Makeup. Check them out on
Sting Makeup Fame.
Yeah, check them out on Instagram and Facebook. Well, guys and gals, you know, you can.
I got a Halloween costume, not costume, makeup done from her. Very good.
Yes, it was. And
very nice.
Very nice. So she sent me a series of messages. So it starts off with all capitals: "Seth Rollins is back! 10 exclamation marks. Ah! I just feel like my heart is going to burst because it's full of rainbows. I'm so happy that the love of my wrestling life is back on my telly. I properly lost it when he came back. God, I just love that guy." Now, Sarah is a relatively new fan, but she really has got a wide on for Seth Rollins. But she carries on. "I have to go through to Edinburgh tomorrow morning for a 3-day training course, and I don't know how I'm going to get a chance to watch Raw before I go. It's literally the most important Raw ever. I may get up at 4 a.m. and watch it before I go. My train is about 6:30 a.m, so I may have to speed through the non-Rollins parts. I would watch it tomorrow night, but I had to share a room with someone that I don't know, and I feel weird about that enough without pulling out my iPad and saying to some random lady, 'Here, do you mind if I watch some wrestling and lose my shit when this guy I love comes out?'" And stuff like that. I love seeing people really happy, and people are so happy that Rollins is back, and I am too. And you know, we're in this nice phase now we've been looking forward to, where all these guys that got injured are coming back. You know, Cesaro came back, Rollins is back, Cena's coming back, might get some Bray Wyatt action soon. Are we going to get, oh my god, will we get the Wyatt family versus the club? That could be a thing.
Yeah, that would be. There's so the thing about it is there's so many options right now.
Yeah, there's quite there's an embarrassment of riches on that roster
for everything. So you know, I never I said this last night. I put out a tweet and I stand by it. Who would have thought that the Intercontinental Championship would steal the show? But then who would have thought that? But who would have thought that the only thing that could top it was a Roman Reigns match?
Max. Like.
Because the thing is, as great as AJ Styles was, and he did do the brunt work of that, Roman Reigns was very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
And I'm looking forward once again, folks, 2 months in a row now, there's going to be stuff on the pay-per-view I'm going to rewatch. I've gone years without rewatching any of these pay-per-views.
Well, I also, like, for the first time, I'm kind of like, oh, I wonder who Roman's going to fight in the pay-per-view. Like, which is not what I would have been thinking the last few months.
No,
you're just like, oh God, who's he against? But I guess we're
wrapping up now, obviously. Well, our part of it, you are going to, this week it's back over to Kenny to talk.
Well, it's now going to be you, actually. You're going to talk to Sandra about it because I have to get aboard the Paul Heyman Express and deal with a lot of stuff going on with that.
Okay, so after this musical interlude, you're going to hear me talk to Sandra about an episode of NXT that I haven't seen. Because I didn't think I was going to be doing it. So, Sandra's going to have opinions, and I'm going to go, yes, I think that's very interesting.
So, if that's not enough of a hook, here's a musical interlude, and when that's finished, you will have Robert and Sandra. Fannies and Boz out.
So we are back for the final segment of the show. We talked news. We had Rich Brennan on the show. And then we had a little bit of a hot take chat about Extreme Rules. But obviously, like we keep saying, guys, check out that roundtable coming this week. Speaking of the roundtable, one of our contributors for that is here with me now. It's Sandra. Sandra, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, Robert. Good to speak to you. I thought I was going to be talking to Kenny, but this is also enjoyable.
Yes, yes, you know, lucky you. one of the things that we talked about earlier in this episode of the news, I wanted to get your take on first before we speak about NXT this week, and that was Cody Rhodes. Now, it has been a bone of contention between the Inside the Ropes family, the Nation of Conversation, over the last couple of years. You are unashamedly, unabashedly, or were, I should say, past tense, a fan of Stardust.
I am still a fan of Stardust. I can watch his stuff. I own his shirt.
Very true. But one of the things that Cody said in his his statement as he left was that he'd pretty much spent most of the last year pitching to ditch the gimmick. And he was talking about how, you know, I looked in my bag and I just saw this outdated thing that I shouldn't be doing anymore. And he just seemed very unhappy with it, whereas before, after Dusty passed away, there was a sort of idea floated out there that he was actually really happy to be carrying on as Stardust, which now it would seem is actually not the case. And I just wondered, as a big fan of Stardust, how do you feel about it? Like, does it change it a little bit or at all for you to hear, you know, oh, I really like this character, but it turns out that the guy, you know, performing sort of saw it as a bit of a burden. You know, does that change how you feel about it in any way? Or
it doesn't necessarily change how I feel about it, because the way I've always felt about Stardust is that I love him 100% totally and completely. And I think he's amazing, right? And Cody Rhodes as a performer is so good, and that's one of the main reasons that I love Stardust 100% totally and completely, is because whenever he was Stardust, he was completely committed to it, whether he wanted to be Stardust or not. He committed to it and he was all in, right? So that let me be all in on the character whenever he was on screen performing. So in that way, it doesn't really change anything. My other thoughts on Stardust have always been, I love Stardust, but I would not be sad to see Cody Rhodes come back. Like, I never thought it was going to be a long-term gimmick. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. All the hissing, all the weird moving about. I don't know. I love everything about it, but I like weird things in wrestling too. But if Cody Rhodes were to come back and have that be a story and get Cody Rhodes to nearer the top of the card, say a spot occupied by one Dean Ambrose now, where you're not like the main guy, but you're important and you're at like the upper mid card level, I would not have been sad to lose Stardust for that, because really overall, I'm a fan of Cody Rhodes. I definitely enjoyed the Stardust character. I loved everything he did. He was amazing, but it comes more from being just a huge fan of Cody Rhodes as a performer, and the fact that he wasn't happy, and the fact that he wanted to be done with Stardust as, I mean, after Dusty passed away, you alluded to it, he was actually doing interviews, and he had a whole statement that he put out about, you know, why should I turn my back on this thing that I'm doing just because my dad died? Like, why should I capitalize on my dad dying to, you know, do a character gimmick change or whatever? And so at the time, it sounded like that it was his decision to continue being Stardust. Now it doesn't seem like that's the case. I think he called the idea to even become Stardust kind of like a half-assed idea, you know, paint like your brother. So I think it's unfortunate for him as a performer, and I'm glad that he asked for and was granted his release then, if he was that unsatisfied and if he was that unhappy about it. It makes me really bummed because I want to see him. I mean, I've missed seeing him on TV. We haven't really been seeing much of him lately, and I have missed him. Like I said, I bought his t-shirt because I freaking love that guy.
One of the things, I don't know if I ever talked about this on the podcast, but I was talking to Kenny about it last night, and I didn't necessarily have to see this right after Dusty passed away, because maybe the emotions would have been too raw. And I mean, like I was saying earlier in this podcast, you know, and rightly so, even almost a year later, you know, you can tell he's still hurting. You know, he's still hurting real bad that he's lost his dad. And it's definitely changed him, and as it would. But I always had this idea in my head that I would love to have seen Stardust in the middle of the ring, you know, with doing a promo where, you know, he can say what he likes, but just have a line where, like, he just starts rubbing the makeup off his face, and he just says, you know, I'm not, you know, despite what this company wants me to be, to, you know, put me on t-shirts and lunchboxes, I'm not an intergalactic space warrior. I'm just a common man like my dad before me. And I think it could have been star-making turn for him, and it could have got him to that level like you wanted. I didn't make the comparison with Ambrose, but I did say earlier in the show that I just don't know why he's not considered the safe pair of hands mid-card guy who's always around the Intercontinental title and can always be relied upon to have good matches. You know, when Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens and people like that are promoted to the main roster, and when guys like AJ Styles come in, you know, it's kind of criminal that nobody was going, oh man, I can't wait to see these guys have a match with Cody Rhodes, because a couple of years ago, you know, Cody was one of the, well, I mean, he still is a great in-ring performer, but he just wasn't really getting to showcase it, so it is quite sad. But
I think that's one of the biggest bummers for me, is I was really hoping we would get to see, you know, Sami Zayn. Well, we saw Sami Zayn versus Stardust, but, you know, Kevin Owens versus Stardust or Cody Rhodes, but Sami Zayn versus Cody Rhodes would be a very different match to Sami Zayn versus Stardust if Cody Rhodes were, you know, at sort of a higher level, and I'm really bummed that we're not going to get to see that, at least not anytime soon.
But let's hopefully talk about something that doesn't leave you quite so bummed out. NXT from this past week, like I said, sorry, I haven't actually watched it yet because I've been drafted in, but I am going to watch it because from what I understand, something that we've been talking about for the last few weeks has kind of kicked off a little bit in terms of Mr. Austin Aries and Mr. Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah, it's interesting. I assume this is the feud.
Yeah.
The show started out Blake and Murphy versus Austin Aries and Vacant. Vacant turned into Shinsuke Nakamura with, you know, awesome lights and music and gloriousness because he's Shinsuke Nakamura. And it was an interesting choice to me because I'm not going to lie, part of me just feared it was going to be Eric Young. And I was just not going to be into that. Sorry. Yeah, exactly. But Austin Aries as a partner, you know, what are his choices? Honestly, the best choice he can make would be Finn Balor or Shinsuke Nakamura. Like, those are the two obvious ones, right? So, yeah, Shinsuke Nakamura comes out. In the match, it kind of seemed like Nakamura just kind of took over and was better. I think they might have even had, like, sort of even amounts of offense or whatever, but it just seemed like Shinsuke did more, maybe just because his presence just outshines Austin Aries in every possible way, which is probably where the feud is going. I don't actually know, but because they didn't really tease any sort of feud on this particular episode, but I'm kind of guessing that that's where it's going, because Nakamura does get the pin when it was Austin Aries who kind of had the confrontation with Blake and Murphy in William Regal's office. But really, this match was interesting for me, not because of Austin Aries and Shinsuke Nakamura, but because it signals Blake and Murphy maybe breaking up. Because at the end of the match, like, I think Wesley Blake gets pinned by Nakamura. Alexa Bliss is just done with these guys. She's like, nope. She walks up the ramp and she looks angry at them. And we get a little promo segment later where she just calls them losers and says, you know, she's been taking opportunity after opportunity and all they've done is find ways to lose. And she wants to become NXT Women's Champion. And that's going to be a lot easier without 470 pounds of dead weight on her back or something like that. I don't have it written down verbatim, but yeah, Alexa walks out and then Wesley Blake walks out on Buddy Murphy. And then Buddy Murphy's just sat looking there sad. And then after the promo segment a little bit later, they all kind of split up and go their separate ways. And I'm really heartbroken about this. Probably more so than a lot of people, but I like Blake and Murphy a lot. And I think they're good as a team, and I have no idea what they would be as a team.
Doesn't seem to make any sense to split them up.
No. So I don't really understand what's going on with that. I mean, if it signals the start of something for Alexa, then that's great because I really, really like her a lot. But as far as Blake and Murphy, who I both like, I enjoy both of them as performers. You know, I've liked Wesley Blake since he was the real life cowboy and everything. So I don't really know where they go from here, but I guess NXT will tell me over the time. But yeah, Bayley. Yeah, we'll talk about Bayley, I think, just all in one package. She has an interview with Kathy Kelly where she's basically overconfident. You know, Nia's big and strong. She's not going to bully me. But what happened in London is going to happen again. I'm going to choke her out again. She seems really overconfident. And like you and I were talking about, she didn't seem that affected by her loss. And I wonder if that will come back to bite her in the ass. And turns out it does at the end of the show. There is a No Way Jose interview that you have to look forward to. When you watch the show, he talks to Kathy Kelly and talks about having a nice smile. He has a pretty nice smile and he's going to go fiesta and like shimmies off screen and Kathy Kelly laughs and it's adorable.
Oh, that's a definite must watch moment then.
Yeah. Yeah. Just everything he does. I just love him. Just love him. He's fantastic. There was a little interesting thing with Carmella. They just kind of cut to a little segment of her saying, you know, it was a bummer what happened to Enzo Amore, but Big Cass is doing great on the main roster. And Carmella has a dream too, and it's to become the NXT Women's Champion. So far that's two women on the show who have expressed interest in being NXT Women's Champion. So it seems like that belt is an important thing that people want to have, which I appreciate kind of a lot. Yeah, Carmella versus Peyton Royce happened after that. And interesting here, did you see in the news or whatever? It's not like huge news, but Carmella's intro used to be like, my name is Carmella and I am the princess of Staten Island and the most fabulous diva in NXT. And now she's the most fabulous chick in NXT.
Ah, so they're ditching diva across the board.
They are. So it just kind of shows their commitment to getting rid of that term. That she had to change it. I would have gone with lady or woman or something with two syllables because it just sounds kind of strange, but I'm sure I'll get used to it.
Just a little bit of breaking news, actually.
Oh, yeah.
This is on WWE.com. This will come as a surprise to nobody, but it is interesting. The circumstances, actually, you'll know what I mean when I say it. So WWE has granted Adam Rose's request to be released as of today. May 23rd, 2016, WWE wishes Rose all the best in his future endeavors. So yeah, they haven't sacked him, which is what everyone thought was going to happen. He has asked to be released, and they have allowed that to happen. I feel sort of two ways about that. On the one hand, maybe he is taking his life sort of into different perspectives and thinking, I need out of here. Like, please, like, just let me go sort my shit out. I hope it's that. And not, you know, either you say you want to go or we'll fire you thing. I hope he's made the decision, like, I need to get myself out of this situation, out of this work environment, and focus on, you know, fixing myself up and repairing damaged relationships
right.
with his family and all that kind of stuff. But there's a little part of me that felt a little more reassured that they hadn't sacked him, because I thought that he was obviously going through a really bad time, and maybe with their support, things would be okay. So there's that I hope they still keep an eye on the guy, because I know a lot of people were very quick to judge with what happened when it came out in the news a few weeks ago. But I still think that, you know, none of us are perfect. We don't know what the circumstances are, and it's. I just hope he's cool. I hope he's cool.
I hope so too. And everything he's going through, it could be kind of a combination of the two scenarios. You know, it could be like, I'm probably going to get fired. I also need to sort my shit out. I need to just like be out of it now, kind of a thing, instead of like waiting for it to happen, because it was probably going to happen. Mm. But I don't know. I hope that it turns out to be better for him in the long run. I hope that he and his family can kind of get their stuff straightened out, and that he can take time to focus on that and not have the career stuff looming over his head too. So yeah. It is unfortunate, the whole situation. I just feel bad for the guy. I kind of just want to give him a hug. Not that, what, you know, domestic battery and everything, it's not, that is not cool, but it just sounds like he's in kind of a desperate situation. But
yeah, people are too quick to throw stones. But anything else from NXT you would like to cover?
Let's see. We got the announcement of the Steel Cage match, which I think Kenny and I talked to you last week. I'm getting confused as to who I talked to.
Oh, well, actually, it was both of us last week, remember?
It was both of you. That's why I'm confused. I was like, I swear, Kenny.
But then Kenny left and we did our own wee thing.
Yeah. Okay. So, we got the announcement of the cage match. And then Blake and Murphy got dumped by Alexa. I'm just kind of going through what happened. Oh, Danny Burch was back on the show, which made me happy. Also known as Martin Stone.
Okay. I've seen him in ICW several times.
Yeah. So he used to work for NXT, and he sometimes comes back and does jobber matches. And he was in a jobber match against Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa with Rob Rizin. But I was really glad to see Danny Burch back. I'm always happy to see Danny Burch back. And it was a good match, because of course it was, because Danny Burch was there. And
that sounded like he was called Danny Burch back, because you said it twice.
Oh, that's funny.
I had a second where I was like, wait a minute, was it Danny Burch back? Danny Burch back? Which sounds like a legit name. You know, it
made it up. In NXT, it does anyway.
One of the things I actually wanted to bring up quickly, because I know that you have to go to do a real life job, was that me and Kenny just did a sort of quick half-hour run-through of the pay-per-view. But one of the things that we didn't cover everything, we just covered a few of the major points, because we wanted to leave a lot of the in-depth stuff for the roundtable. But one of the things we didn't cover with Kenny was the Natalya-Charlotte match, which saw our beloved Dana Boobs.
I'm so excited about this.
Get herself involved, and she was doing the Ric Flair gimmick, and then she came and helped out, and she was doing the strut and stuff. And I remember turning to Kenny and just saying, Sondra is going to love this.
I was correct, right?
So this is ticking all your boxes.
Oh, this is fantastic. This is fantastic in pretty much every way. Like, it makes Charlotte even more of a dickhead, because she's had to enlist this Dana Boobs woman, who is just a bizarre human, right? Like, Dana's just a bizarre human, and I love her. I love her so much. And it's good for Dana, because Dana was brought in to be with Emma, because Dana shouldn't be brought in as a single thing right now. She can't carry a feud on her own at this point. She can't really carry it in the ring. And as much as I love her promos and their awful, awful cadence, she needs something to bounce off of. And I think being around Charlotte and Ric Flair will help her out a lot, both, you know, in wrestling, because she'll be with Charlotte, who is a good wrestler now, and, you know, picked it up really quickly and everything. What I think is really funny is that Dana and Charlotte had this feud over tap out ad. And so apparently they've resolved those issues, because, like, in the promos for that feud and everything, this is just my NXT geekery, but they were all like, Dana's going, I taught her how to lift and I taught her how to train and I'm amazing and I'm Dana. And so I think it's nice that they've resolved the tap out ad issue. And now Dana's on the main roster and she's just so hateable. And Charlotte's like one of the best heels in the company right now. And Ric Flair is so weird. Like, can you imagine the faces that Ric Flair and Dana Boobs are going to make in the background of Charlotte promos? It's going to be
best. I can't even imagine. Or the moment where, God, I hope they don't do a thing where she becomes like Charlotte's mother. Mother, like her stepmother, because Flair like falls in love with Dana Boobs.
Oh gosh, that never crossed my mind.
Yeah, would she become Dana Flair or would he be Ric Boobs?
I think he'd be Ric Boobs.
Yeah, I think we'd call him Ric Boobs.
I think so. I think that's the way it would have to go.
Oh, jeez. Sorry, oh, Flair fans. He just ruined it forever. with the Nature Boy, Ric Boobs.
The Nature Boy, Ric Boobs, indeed. Oh, and before we go, we should mention Bayley and Nia Jax also.
Oh, yeah. Because
they were in the main event of the episode, and Bayley got wrecked. And you and I had been speaking about Bayley and Nia Jax also, and how neither one of us is really that keen to see the match. And the match played out, I think, exactly like it should have. It's weird, because watching wrestling has affected the way I can actually consume entertainment, because I'm way too analytical now, I think. Because I'm like, I love Bayley. I want her to win, and I don't want her to get hurt. However, it is better that she has to be the underdog now, because if she just beat Nia again, she'd be Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
And I don't want Bayley to be Roman Reigns. Bayley should never be Roman Reigns.
Definitely.
Bayley has never been that.
Definitely
she
not.
Should not be. And so I think this is exactly what had to happen, as much as I don't like seeing her get hurt. And, you know, Nia just, she just really killed her a lot. Like, Bayley got a little bit of offense back and went for guillotines and stuff, but it didn't work. And I think Bayley's overconfidence might have played a part in that. Like,
you think this is the story we're getting? It's Bayley didn't, you know, she lost to Asuka, but she didn't learn from that what she should have. And
it could be.
And now she's going to get, you know, she's going to
I think she's going to have to work her way back up. Because, you know, she expressed interest in the championship earlier on in the show. And so, you know, that's Bayley, Carmella, and Alexa all wanting to be champion this episode. And she said, you know, she just needs to move past Nia. Like, it was going to be this, you know, easy obstacle, and it isn't. So I don't know. Like, I don't know the takeover card, and I don't want to know the takeover card, because I'm actually really interested to see where this Bayley thing goes. But
yeah, I don't know what it is either. To put your mind at ease, I'm not going to spoil it by accident or anything.
Okay, so you don't know.
No, I don't know.
Because I know Kenny knows all the spoilers, so it's hard to have these conversations sometimes. Does Bayley get her rematch?
I don't know.
Do you think? Because I'm not so sure right now.
No, I'm not.
They seem
to
be having Nia confrontations with Asuka.
Maybe there's that thing where she says, you know, I want my rematch, and Regal's just like, you know, you've really not shown that you can do that. You know, you've not, like, really shown that you've earned that.
Right.
And maybe she goes through it. Because, you know, Bayley at her most effective was when she was having, you know, a massive crisis of confidence. That's kind of that's where we get behind her and root for her. So, you know, I guess.
And that's, I mean, on her way to the title when she beat Sasha, what she did was say, you know, I want a shot, but I need to earn it. So I need to beat Charlotte. And then she beat Charlotte. And then she needed to beat Becky, and she beat Becky. And then she beat Sasha. Yeah. Tongue tied all of a sudden. But that journey back to the top, I think, is a more interesting story than, hey, I win. So
yeah,
it's kind of touching all the right heartstrings here.
I concur.
And I kind of want to see Nia versus Asuka also.
It'd be interesting to see that, yeah. I think so. But unfortunately, we have run out of time.
Yes.
At the end here. You have to go and do some job things.
I get to go have coffee with my college roommate.
Oh, that's even more. That's more fun. I thought you had to go to work.
No,
that's cool then. That's cool. Enjoy your coffee date.
I will.
And I'll speak to you later this week for the roundtable, which is the next time everybody listening right now can hear us all together discussing Extreme Rules and the fallout from tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Obviously, we both hope you enjoy it. Thank you very much for listening to another Inside the Ropes.